This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, welcome along. It is the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, and we could kick off this week by mentioning wonder strikes across all three Sky Bet EFL divisions, or a 96-minute winner from a 41-year-old, or even an alleged unorthodox grabbing incident. But of course, the big news from the EFL is by this time next week, and for the first time since early March, some games may actually have welcomed a restricted number of supporters. It's the official EFL podcast. So more to come on the news that EFL grounds in COVID zones 1 and 2 are set to reintroduce a limited number of fans from next week as we record this episode of the official EFL podcast. But first, to matters in the Sky Bet Championship, and even taking into account a midweek home defeat to Brentford, it's been quite a start for Valerian Ismail, the latest manager of Barnsley. 4 wins in his 6 games in charge, a couple of them aided by goals from Corley Wood. Now, I can see you, and we're 24 hours after a defeat, and you're not used to losing at the moment, you guys. So how, I mean, are you a quick processor of disappointment, Corley, or does it linger with you for a few days, or how are you with this?
I think, to be honest, obviously, you've got, there's so many games in the Championship, as you know, you can't sort of dwell on a defeat or get too excited over wins, so... obviously, we lost last night, and but we've been on a really good run, and we don't want to get too down over it. We've got another game to look forward to at the weekend, and we need to get ready for that now.
In contrast, I was looking at your goals haul since you joined the club, and obviously had your initial loan period, 34 in 75 league starts. So you are consistently right at the top level for strikers. So I can't help but feel it feels like Barnsley's a happy place for you.
Yeah, definitely. I think for any player, it's important that you like you just said, obviously I've had a lot of starts there, and playing regularly has been a massive factor for that. Previously at other clubs, I was sort of in and out, or you play a game, you don't play for 3 games, and it's hard to get sort of any momentum. But since I've been at Barnsley, it's been fantastic for me. I've been playing every time I've sort of been fit, I've played, and it's been great. And obviously my goal ratio for that has been really good. So it's a great home for me now, and I'm really enjoying my football here.
As a goal scorer, is the whole sort of rhythm of your life affected by what sort of run of form you're in? I.e., if you're scoring regularly, you're happy as Larry, and if you're not, you're a real grouch around home, and you know everybody has to avoid you and stuff.
Yeah, exactly that. I think my missus and my mum and stuff, they know that if I don't score, I could be in a bad mood. So, like you say, obviously as a striker, you want to score goals, and you're obviously judged on goals. So, when you do go a period without scoring, it's disappointing. But you've also got to sort of stick with it and keep working hard, because you'll know that you'll. Sorry, my mum just walked in the room.
Is she?
I'm joking.
Does she not? Yeah, can you just shout? You're doing in the middle of an interview, Mum. What's your mum called?
Lynn, she's gone now. Sorry about that.
Is she? Okay, fine. What, she thought you were just on the phone to one of your mates, did she?
I don't know what she thought. I said, don't come in, but she just walked in.
Okay, that's good. We are recording this, and obviously it will crop up on the official EFL podcast Christmas bloopers tape. When Lynn walked in and Corley was in mid-sentence, where were we before your mum so rudely interrupted us?
No, I think we were obviously disappointed when I don't score. I'm not pleasant to be around, but when I am scoring and in a good form, I'm a happy person, yeah.
Okay, so following the sort of flow and journey of your career, obviously you were a young debutant, non-leagues in the FA Trophy with Luton. You got your move to Fulham. You were a fairly young debutant there, and then you had a sort of procession of loans and things. Have there been difficult moments along the way before you've got to this point? What did you learn about yourself, and what kept you going as a result of some of those twists and turns?
Yeah, for sure. Like you say, obviously I've sort of made my debut for Luton really young, and then obviously moved to Fulham and was in sort of the academy system there and in the youth teams and stuff like that, and then went out on loan and sort of didn't really do too well. I was probably too young really to go out on loan. I went to League Two at Southend and probably struggled with the physicality of things. And then literally in the same season went back to Fulham and ended up playing in the Premier League in the first team, which was obviously crazy going from League Two to the Premier League in one season. And then, like you say, obviously mixture of loans and stuff, went to Burton, enjoyed it, done really well, and went to Bristol City, didn't work out. So there's been loads of ups and downs, but I think, and then obviously I signed for Barnsley, and I think as a player, you just sort of got to keep believing in yourself. I knew I had the sort of the talent and the ability and the work ethic to get where I wanted to be, and thankfully now, like we just previously said, I've been given a lot of game time and I managed to sort of prove that I can score goals and can be effective at this level.
I mean, Colly, this is a really tough question, but I know you can cope with it. Do you have to arrive at an acceptance of the level that you're playing at? Because sometimes if you've had a sniff of an even higher level and you've dropped down a bit, it can really undermine some players. You will have had mates who've maybe done okay, but have almost drifted out of the game. Is acceptance of where you are the absolute key to keeping going?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I think obviously I've sort of tasted different levels of football. I've played in every league, really. I've played League Two, League One, Championship and the Premier League. And obviously now I'm playing the Championship and obviously enjoying my football and sort of as a Championship striker. I obviously understood that when I was at Fulham in the Premier League, there's players ahead of you that are world-class centre-forwards, international players. So, yeah, you do have to obviously sort of take a step back sometimes and try different avenues. And I found myself, obviously, here at Barnsley, I had to take a step back to League One to get game time initially, which I didn't really want to do because I had been in the Championship and stuff like that. But it was the best thing I ever done. Then getting promoted to the Championship and obviously getting that chance again and proving myself here for the last two seasons has been really good.
So what about the voyage of discovery and getting to know a new manager? And let's be honest, mate, you have had probably more than some players would have. So we've got the German Daniel Stendel when you're arriving, then we sort of flow into the Austrian Gerhard Struber. Now we've got Valerian Ishmael, who is, I think, French but a German citizen, because I'm assuming there's lots of sort of little cultural nuances between them, and you've got to get to know the each individual personality and how they operate.
Yeah, definitely. Like you say, I've only been here sort of 2 years and had three managers already. So, but yeah, like you said, there is differences. I think in terms of what the club want at Barnsley, they employ managers that want to play a high pressing football and play in a certain style. So in terms of the actual styles, obviously they do differ slightly in formations or certain tactics, but the actual styles of the way we want to play sort of stays the same. But obviously different personalities. Yeah, we had sort of Daniel Stendel, who's sort of a very emotional man, and then we had Struber, who was more of a very calm and sort of a tactician. And obviously now we've got De Gaffer now, and he's sort of very calm, but very not scary, but he's got a presence about him that all the team respect. And so definitely differences, but all good in their own ways.
Is there sometimes a period of uncertainty where you're fighting to understand where you fit in with the new gaffer, but then conversely, there'll be ways in which they stretch you in slightly different ways to the predecessors, so they're adding to your game as well, Colly?
Yeah, definitely. When new managers come in, I think, not just in football, but probably in any job, I think everyone's a little bit nervous and it's a bit of uncertainty. But for me, I mean, I played up front sort of as a number nine under Daniel Stendel, and then Gerhard Struber come in and dropped me back a little bit into the number 10, and I was a little bit like, wow, what's going on? So, but I loved my time playing there in the number 10 a little bit deeper, and I learned new things. So it's interesting to see managers see players or see different things that they can use the players for. And like I just said, obviously Stendel see me as a number 9, whereas Struber sort of saw me as a number 10. So it's interesting to sort of learn off different managers and see where they want you to play and where you fit in.
Do you think sometimes Barnsley are a little bit misunderstood? Because I often look from a distance and there's quite a turnover of players, and I look at the current squad and there's a Dane, quite a few Austrians, a Pole, we've got Germany represented, Kenya, Portuguese. But it belies the fact that actually there's quite a lot of English players in there as well. They've recruited from sort of clubs a bit lower down in England as well. Do you think they are a little bit misunderstood because of the overseas ownership consortium, etc.?
Yeah, maybe. I think it's clear to us at the club that they are the type of club that want to buy young talents, maybe players that have not played in a championship before, but they know can play in the championship. So like you just said, we've sort of signed players from, say, League One that have done well in League One, sort of maybe go under the radar a little bit, but we sign them and they come to Barnsley and they do really, really well and prove themselves in the championship. So and also the lads from abroad, obviously a lot of them haven't played in England before. But it's interesting to see, but it's really good because it's a really young squad, a lot of young players. Sort of needing to prove himself and wanting to prove himself. It's a really nice sort of dynamic in the squad to have a young team that's all fighting for success, really, yeah.
What do you think you've got to do as the next step to sort of consolidate in the championship? What's the next stage of development for Barnsley?
I think last season was a massive success. I think everyone wrote us off to get relegated and people thought that we wasn't good enough for the league. We obviously managed to stay up on the last day, and we had a squad full of players that there was only a couple of us that had ever played at this level before. Even myself, obviously I'd played in the championship, but I'd never fully played regularly. So we had a young team, lads that hadn't played at this level, and they were learning, making mistakes. We were all making mistakes, and now this season we've stayed up, we've got a second chance at it, and we've got a squad full of players now that know the division, and they know what they're going to come up against week in, week out. And obviously early on, at the start of this season, it's sort of shown, and we've picked up some really good results, and we're sitting in a good position, and we're looking up rather than behind us.
Listen, I'm going to let you go because I'm frightened that your mum's going to burst in again with another job she needs to do or wants to get you to do something.
I think she wants me to do the dishwasher, I think.
Oh, is that what it is? Oh, fantastic. But before you go, I just got to ask you, some wonder strikes in particular last weekend. We had the Lewis Cook one for Bournemouth. We had Grant Ledbetter for Sunderland. There was a great Danny Rowe one as well for Oldham. Callum Stiles got an absolute welter. I mean, I'm sure you're more interested in your own scuff in the same game. But but what effect does it have on a whole team when one of the boys gets an absolute worldie as part of a win? Does it give the whole club a lift?
Oh, 100%. I think in that game as well, even more, because we hit the crossbar three times. And then, obviously, Callum come up and hit that ball, and it was an unbelievable strike. He's a great player, to be fair. He's got a massive, massive future ahead of him, and like you just said, it completely lifted us as a squad, and obviously for the club as well. To beat Nottingham Forest at home is a great result for us. So for Callum to get that goal, it was an unbelievable moment.
Keep up the great work. Give our love to Lynn, won't you? Tell her to let you have a rest because it's your day off tomorrow. So we don't want you overdoing it. Great to talk to you, mate.
Top man, mate. Thanks a lot.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Tate.
Whatever the story of your week, good or bad, you will struggle to match the narrative of the one Exeter City's captain had at the end of last month. Jake Taylor scored in a comeback win on a Tuesday, got married on a Wednesday, had his honeymoon of sorts on a Thursday, went back to training on Friday, scored in another win on Saturday. And the first thing I thought, Jake, when I heard about this story was how very tolerant the new Mrs. Taylor actually is to allow her wedding to be sort of bracketed by football.
Yeah. Fair play to her for sort of, there's been a lot written about it so far. And to be fair, most of the headlines are more about me scoring a few times in a week than actually getting married. So, yeah, obviously it was a fantastic week, and it was topped off by having some really good results on the football pitch as well, which always helps.
Listen, you were recording this at home. She's working upstairs. You better keep your voice down. You better frame this story to slightly more to marital bliss as it goes on. What's the lovely lady's name, please? Other than Mrs. Taylor, obviously.
It's Catherine Taylor. Yeah, so Catherine, which still sounds a little bit strange for me, anyway.
Yeah, I guess it would do. I mean, I also thought to myself, what a blooming good job you did come back in that game on Tuesday night, because you footballers don't take well to losses and do sometimes need 24 hours, 48 hours to get them out of your system, don't you?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think even on the Tuesday during the day, I sort of had so much stuff to sort out for the actual day on the Wednesday. It sort of took my mind off it a little bit, which, you know, maybe helped settle my nerves slightly. But yeah, it was obviously coming back and winning and scoring. Obviously we were all in a really positive spirit anyway, and that just sort of topped it off. I think it might have been a little bit different if we had, lost that game. It's difficult for footballers to sort of go home and switch off sometimes, but I don't think I would have, been able to go into my wedding with a bit of, dampened spirits. But it really did work out pretty perfectly.
Did you just reach a point, the pair of you and Catherine, where you thought, do you know what, life's got to go on? We had our plans for this year. They haven't quite worked out as we thought they would, but let's just get the sort of the basic signatures done. And then I'm guessing you're going to have a nice honeymoon next summer, are you?
Yeah, exactly that. I think it was around March time where, our official wedding, which was supposed to be June, sort of got cancelled. And then we rearranged thinking, things might be a little bit better by October. And then obviously, it hasn't got a lot better. But, thankfully, we were allowed to have 15 guests there, which was difficult to get it down from 100. But it was 15 really close friends and family. And like you said, it was just important for both of us to sort of, get it done. Move on, and then hopefully we can, have a nice honeymoon in the summer, and, have a party with, the rest of the guests that were supposed to come, in a few years' time. So there's definitely going to be a big, party and celebration at some point. Just when that is, we're not too sure just yet.
Seriously, once it came to playing the football, that obviously the night before, and then obviously a few days later, can you completely get it out of your mind? And ditto, when you're getting married and you're having that day off Thursday, honeymoonish, sort of curtailed, whatever you want to call it, rest over from whatever you did on the Wednesday, no need to go into the detail, it's a family podcast. Could you get the football out of your head as well? We're playing them at the week. But, by Thursday, you're normally thinking, right, I'm going to be up against him and this is what's going to happen, etc.
Yeah, it was definitely difficult. The manager was really good with me. He said after the game on the Tuesday that, I could have the Thursday off and that to come in Friday. So it sort of gave me an extra day to sort of celebrate with my family that had come down, and obviously my partner's family who had come down. And then, as soon as sort of Thursday night came where, people were having a few drinks, it was important for me to sort of, get back into football mode and realise we had another big game on the weekend. So, obviously I'm going to, have a proper celebration soon. But, it was important for me to sort of switch back into football mode and concentrate on the job ahead.
And how long have you two been together, if you don't mind me asking? Let's just get the basics of the relationship sorted.
7 years we've been together, so
What took you so long, Jake, to pop the question?
She asked me that for about 6 years, she did, so...
Careful, mate, be very careful.
My sister got married a couple of summers ago, so that sort of... I didn't want to sort of steal their thunder, so that bided me a little bit of time. And then, once that was out of the way, I didn't really have any excuse. So that's what I tell her anyway.
Well, listen, congratulations from us. I mean, fingers crossed you get those further celebrations next summer. But I have to say to you, Jake, fingers crossed your season is not extended for a fourth campaign out of five. Mate, you do not want to be in those playoffs again, do you, after what you've suffered the last few years since you went down there?
Yeah, it's been pretty tough. I think it's obviously well documented. Three playoff finals out of four, and having not come out on the winning side just yet. Yeah, it's obviously it's really hard to take at times. I think you think that, you know, you work so hard all season and then, you know, come to the playoffs and, you know, think that this might be your year, and it hasn't quite happened for whatever reason just yet. So yeah, I think, you know, I'm quite strong mentally, so it's you know, I go into each season with a positive mindset, and you know, I think we've got a really good squad this year, so we're just sort of taking it each game as we come. And fingers crossed we can have a positive outcome this year.
I was going to ask you how it affects your thinking and you know, how did Matt Taylor, the manager, sort of process it with you when you came back? Does he, first session back, say, right, new set of circumstances, sort of deal with it? Or do you all get left to deal with it in your own, you know, good time and in your own way?
I think it was different this year because we sort of lost so many players that were involved last year. We sort of didn't have too long off either, so we came back and it was a bit of a different, you know, dynamics and different players, so it just felt a lot different to how the previous year felt. But yeah, I think, you know, the way the manager dealt with it was fantastic. Sort of, you know, we addressed the situation, we addressed what had happened, and it was important to move forward. We've got, you know, a lot of young players in our squad this year, so it's important that they have, you know, the confidence to go out there and express themselves as much as possible. And, you know, the manager does that with them, and so far they've, you know, hit the ground running, which is important for this football club.
And you've kind of undermined the principle that everybody said without supporters in stadiums there's no difference between home advantage and playing away, because your home form's brilliant. In fact, I think when you lost at the weekend, if my memory serves me right, was it only your second home defeat in approaching 20 matches, something like 18 matches? But obviously away, you're not really getting off the mark. I mean, what is that characteristic? What do you put that down to, Jake, that disparity?
I'm not sure, to me. I think since I signed down here, our home form's always been fantastic, and especially sort of this year without any fans, it's been you know, a different sort of experience for everyone. I don't know whether that might help some players, or, you know, some players, they love the atmosphere, and, you know, whether you get a bit of stick at away grounds or wherever it is, it's definitely different. But it's not something you can really put your finger on. I think, yeah, our home form's been really good, our away form's been okay, but obviously there's still room for improvement, and, you know, if we can sort of keep picking up good results at home and, you know, nicking a few points away from home, then, you know, fingers crossed we'll be in a good position come the end of the season.
You're definitely contenders, aren't you? You're definitely, you know, you've started right, you've been in and around, you know, for all of the season so far. You're definitely on for another one of Exeter's campaigns. Fingers crossed it goes slightly better than three of the last four, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to, you know, quietly go about our business. You know, there's lots of talk about lots of other clubs in the division, about, you know, how they should be doing. But yeah, we're quietly going about our business. We're happy with the way we've started. Like I said, we've got some really promising youngsters who have, you know, hit the ground running, and, you know, hopefully they can continue that form throughout the season, because it's, you know, it's strenuous. It's the games really do come thick and fast in this league at the moment. So, you know, I'm sure that they'll be, you know, still raring to go come March time when the pitches aren't great, or, you know, it's a bit different. But yeah, we've started the season exactly how we would have wanted to. Hopefully we can continue our good run of form and have a good, successful season.
And what a party it could be next. Let's hope mid-May rather than end of May. Combine the two, mate. Get all your guests together for the wedding, celebrating promotion, all the boys there as well. Oh, party time. That could be some event, could it not? In fact, I wonder if we could sell a ticket. Do you want to publicise it now? You got a venue in mind?
Well, I've had a venue in mind for three out of the last 4 years and it hasn't quite come to life yet.
Right. But, okay.
But
okay.
Yeah, I think, yeah, definitely. I think if, you know, if all things go well, it would be a special summer. It would be nice to sort of be off in May for once in my career, I think. So, we'll just, like I said, we'll see how things go, and then fingers crossed we can, you know, have a successful season.
Yeah. And, you know, after the year she's had with her wedding being put back, I think Catherine just deserves not to have an old grouch alongside her on a sunbed on her honeymoon, but to have somebody that's actually happy because his football dreams have come true. Listen, love to Catherine.
Yeah, Thank you very much.
Great to talk to you, Jake.
Nice to see you guys.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Since we were last with you, two more rounds of fixtures across the Sky Bet Championship, League One and League Two. But as we welcome the former Crewe Alexandra, Norwich City, West Ham United and England striker Dean Ashton for the first time for the official EFL podcast, it is matters off the pitch that have taken centre stage over the past few days, because when the current lockdown in England ends on the 2nd of December, up to 4,000 fans will be allowed inside EFL grounds situated in Tier 1 areas, falling to a maximum of 2,000 in Tier 2. I mean, there's no doubt about it, Dean, just generally across the country, there is definitely cause for optimism with the news we've had per se across the board the last 10 days.
Of course it is, yeah. I think it's. I've only really realised it since I stopped playing, quite what it means to supporters to support their team for so many years, and what it means not only for their mental health, but for their communities, for their families. And so I've really realised just how much they miss it and how much they need it as much as we need them. It's fantastic news to think that we could have supporters, however many, depending on what tier you're in, back in the ground, is very, very promising.
It's a brilliant welcome step forward. I'm just going to read you some of the advice when we had the pilot events at the start of October, which obviously got postponed. And that document said, fans will be advised to take extreme care when shouting, singing or celebrating. Must avoid hugs, high fives and close contact. And I mean, we know the vast majority of fans are very well behaved, but I think it's probably important to point out, Dean, that everybody is being scrutinised at the moment, and any little pockets of fans that are ripping off masks, not social distancing in grounds, could scupper it for all the rest of us and all the rest of the clubs.
Yeah, I think it's very difficult to police, should I say, in terms of you can't go through a set of fans and say, right, well, you effectively look like you're not going to toe the line. I think we have to try and trust in everybody, trust in your own supporters that they'll do the right thing. I think it's going to be very, very difficult, because even the most sort of hardened supporter that wants to do the right thing, when their team scores a goal or the referee makes a bad decision, trying to sit there with your hands under your bottom and not shouting is going to be very difficult. But I think at the same time, I think fans will try and respect as best they can the things that are put in place. But as always, I think it's hopefully going to be down to the other supporters themselves to pull anyone up who they feel isn't doing the right thing.
And I'm not saying, Dean, I'm not categorising all supporters. I'm just saying this is not the time to take chances or for any little pockets of support to do anything stupid when the eyes of the government and the eyes of the country are on. Do you think as well, in terms of going back and those that are willing and those that aren't, there'll be the same sort of judgments going down as you and I might have about what we're willing to do in our everyday lives? Would we be willing to go into this restaurant or that supermarket or take public transport? Will it be the same with football, do you think? Do you think some people might still be a bit reticent and want to see what measures are put in place before they put themselves in that environment?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think there'll be a lot of fans that will want to see this first phase, to see how well it's organised, to see, like you say, whether there are pocket of fans that see it as an opportunity to get themselves in the limelight, however that may be. I think there's going to be a lot of fans that, as desperate as they are to get back, they will be a little bit wary of just how well these clubs, and that's quite easy to forget, is how much work is going to have to go in for these clubs to get the structure in place to allow fans back in. And I think you're right. I think everyone's different in terms of how safe they feel. Just going to the local shop, I think, is the same as going to a football ground, in my opinion.
Well, listen, cause for optimism, it's a step forward, but I think our message would be just the beginning. And that's certainly the message of Rick Parry, the chairman of the EFL, that a lot more the EFL hope will continue to be done. into the Sky Bet Championship then, and I'm expecting a smile on your face, Dean, because Norwich City's fantastic 6th and 7th league wins in unbeaten 9 games. I've taken them to the top of the table. Bournemouth won 2 in a week, including coming from 2-0 down to beat Reading. And there were another couple of points for Wycombe Wanderers. Having lost the first 7, they've now picked up 9 points from their last possible 18. Have we, in the pre-season predictions and previews, have we underestimated Norwich City, do you think? Did they quietly get less attention than maybe Bournemouth and Watford did?
I think mainly because so many of their players were touted as being, the big Premier League clubs were looking to try and raid Norwich's best talent. And so there was huge amounts of questions hanging over the club right until the last day of the window as to their best players and how that would affect them, and probably the manner in the way they certainly went down was slightly different to the other clubs, just how easily they sort of rolled over towards the end of the season after lockdown. But I certainly was under no illusions that they were going to be right up there this season. If you look at the players, the squad that they've got, I think the squad's better this season than it was at the start of last season, and certainly the season before that. So I could certainly see that they were in a great place. And it was only really a matter of time before the quality players that they've got in their squad would sort of gel together.
I think you've got your ear to the ground and you're obviously still in the area and you'll talk to a lot of people and things. I wonder if they did what I would describe as almost a strategic promotion, which is that they got themselves up knowing there was a heavy likelihood of them coming back down again, but would never say it publicly, but didn't overstretch themselves and created a base for maybe one day getting out of this yo-yo existence that Norwich seem to have had probably since you played for them in the mid-noughties.
You're absolutely right. It is a running joke that Norwich are the biggest yo-yo club. Them and West Brom, I think, have had the most promotions and relegations. So that's something that was looked at a couple of years ago when they brought Stuart Webber in, and the club definitely changed their mindset in terms of how they're going to approach transfers, how they're going to look to promote the youth, looking to build. And I think they thought maybe 5-6 years this would take. And it just so happened that Daniel Farker and the players that they brought in that most of it had never heard of just seemed to click. And that season that they got promoted was way quicker than they thought. So I think you're right. I think it has been more of a building process. And again, you look at the recruitment and the transfer fees that they've got into the club. The club are in a great place financially. And I think they are much more suited, like I said, with the squad that they've got to get promoted again and give themselves a better chance to stay in the Premier League, a bit like Burnley did.
Hell of a marker this week. I mean, away wins at Stoke and away wins at Middlesbrough. Yeah. And I've got a bone to pick with you, actually, because your home debut for Norwich City was against Middlesbrough. In the latter stages of that game, Dean, what was the score in that match? Can you remember?
I think, didn't Jimmy Floyd stick a free kick in to make it 4-1 with 10 minutes to go, something
yes,
like
indeed.
That?
And then, and what happened in the last 10 minutes, Dean?
Well, obviously, I just thought myself, I needed a home debut goal. So as far as I was concerned, it was just a nice little moment for me. I never thought we would then go on to equalise in the last minute. It was just the most incredible match to be a part of.
Yeah.
And I do thank Middlesbrough for their generosity.
I'll tell you what, the high you must feel, people talk about last minute wins and stuff, but when you are absolutely stuffed out of sight, presumably with 15 to go, thinking, oh goodness gracious me, what have I done here, get me off this. Is that what goes through you, Dean?
Yeah, it does, because we'd lost 3-0 as well against Aston Villa in my debut the week before and been totally outplayed. So then suddenly the next week at home, you then getting beat 4-1, I was thinking, have I made the right choice here? Because I thought that this was the right move for me, and suddenly in a 10-minute period, it had gone from, is this the right move, to what a great move.
I mean, bizarre moment in the game last weekend at the Riverside Stadium, that the Marcus Tavernier penalty, the double hit. I mean, that is a very rare occurrence in football, is it not? To slip, as you can make an absolute pillock of yourself with a penalty by trying to be smart, but to actually fall over while you're doing it, hit the ball from one foot onto the other foot, I mean, that's a rare occurrence.
It is, yeah. I mean,
all right, don't laugh too much, mate.
It takes some doing, to be honest. And they didn't understand, did they? The players were turning around saying, "What's gone?" Because it just doesn't happen. It's so unfortunate, and you know the embarrassment he must have felt. The fact that he'd done that would be very, very difficult to, and to be honest, I think Norwich then went on from that and deserve to win the game in the end after that moment.
So Norwich are definitely clicking. Bournemouth clicking too. I was watching the game against Reading, 2-0 down at half time, and suddenly found a whole raft of extra gears after the break.
Yeah, I think that's a good point in terms of they are able to just, when they click with the players that they've got, again, a squad that's full of talent, they're going to be pretty hard to stop. And although Reading were great in that first half, Bournemouth were just absolutely outstanding. And with the likes of David Brooks back, Stanislas, Dan Juma, you know, who's a Dutch international, and Solanke's now starting to look like the real deal, you sort of think there's not going to be many defences that can stop that forward line. It's and that's with Josh King not even in the side as well. So
yeah,
plenty of optimism for Bournemouth. And Jason Tindall, what I like about him is that he has tweaked a few things, but not really. He knows he's got talented players and they like to play a certain way, and that is going to work in the Championship.
Yeah, but we had him on last week and you know, he made some fairly ballsy decisions as well, because he broke up effectively Eddie Howe's team that's been the nucleus for the last 6, 7, 8 years. Charlie Daniels, Simon Francis, Andrew Sermon, players that have been in and around a while. So it takes a bit of bottle to do that when you're a fledgling manager in your first position.
Yeah, it does. It would be easy, just wouldn't it, to stick with them same sort of players and hope that it's going to be good enough. But I think he wanted to go in a slightly different direction, and you can see it in the performances when they get it right. That vibrancy now, which takes some doing to get the confidence back in the players when you've had such a tough season, I think really sort of proves that he's got the backing of the players, which is so important.
Now, listen, when I heard about Darnell Fisher of Preston's FA charge for allegedly grabbing Callum Patterson by the gentleman's apparel, I was then thinking of watching you and Colin on the Quest highlights a few weeks ago. So you spotted that incident with going on at a corner? You spotted that incident?
Yes, with Wickham Millwall, Kashket just putting his arm behind the defender and grabbing Bielakowski's glove to stop him from... stopping the corner going into the net. And I put myself in that position and thought, what would I perhaps do to get away with something in the box? And that's what meant that I spotted that.
So, I mean, this small amount, this mini skullduggery is going around anywhere where you think you can get away with it. Just those little gestures behind somebody's back. You've got an awareness of where the referee is. It's part and parcel of football.
Yeah, I think it's, a lot of the time as well, it's easy to forget that we're all quite childish footballers. You know, it's not a serious job we do. We come in every day, and if you were to walk into a training ground, it's just so silly. It's, you know, there's pranks going on all the time. So it is quite hard to then set, you know, to take that away from players when it gets into a match situation. You of course you do silly things. You pretend you're doing your shoe up and then dart to the near post. You half pull a defender's shorts down just to get that little edge on. You know, you're just constantly doing silly things, and it's quite easy to forget. But obviously, the Darnell Fisher incident, you know, it was pretty clear on camera what was happening.
I'll say allegedly just until the FA make their final judgment on it. But I'm okay. I'm sure you've had your... Is it intuitive, or is there a kind of master of the dressing room going round? Have you tried this one? Wait, go down there. Does it get passed on from one generation to the next?
No. Look, footballers don't think that deeply, to be honest, Ben. I think it's very much off the cuff, and it's silliness. That's what it is. And we are quite immature as players at times. It's easy to forget how young footballers are, and they can be very immature.
I just imagine if people tried all this kind of thing in a normal workplace, if we ever get back to such thing, you know. Don't try it over the water cooler at next time you get back to work, folks, when offices are back open. Fixtures this weekend then. Friday night game is the West London Derby, Brentford against QPR. Early kickoff on Saturday is Reading against Bristol City. There's a sort of bottom of the table clash between Derby and Wickham. Norwich entertain Coventry. Bournemouth travel to Rotherham. And Tony Pulis up against the team he got promoted to the Premier League in 2008 as Sheffield Wednesday take on Stoke City. In League One, Hull City strengthen their grip at the top with a couple more wins, the second really impressively away at Ipswich Town. Accrington Stanley made it four league wins in an unbeaten last five. Blackpool's five-match winning streak in all competitions was ended by Doncaster Rovers. Burton Albion picked only their second league win of the season, their first in 12. And after just one win all season, and the club currently 23rd, Shrewsbury Town have sacked manager Sam Ricketts. Does Hull City's form, 10 wins in 13, no draws, just prove it's better to go for it rather than hang on and try and be difficult to beat? I.e. win one, lose one is better than drawing two, isn't it? Yeah, I think the maths work out there.
I think it is in the Championship, Leagues One and League Two. I think it makes it easier to climb the table quicker if you've got that kind of, yes, win or lose mentality, rather than, you know, eking out draws, which, okay, might be okay for confidence, but actually over time can be quite draining. So I've been so impressed with Grant McCann and what he's been able to do. I mean, again, to think where his players were mentally at the end of last season, to be able to turn that round so quickly, albeit, you know, with a few additions, Lewis Potter's been the revelation, and Malik Wilkes has really sort of taken on that number nine role extremely well. But still, you're right. I think being able to turn that around and be aggressive in the way that you want to play, mightily impressed with what he's done so far.
Yeah, it says a lot about his mindset. Set then, does it, that he's not advising caution to his players, but he is pushing them to maximise every opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, I think he must realise what potential there is in that squad, and that maybe that wasn't a true reflection of some of the players that were there at the back end of last season, and maybe they felt a bit sorry for themselves having lost the two best players that were clearly keeping them mid-table and above. So I think he's certainly shown strong character as well, because it would be easy as a manager just to come back with not that, like you say, that aggressive mentality in the way you want your teams to play. So I think credit to him, but credit to the players as well in terms of buying into, because it's easy for a player to think, well, the manager's useless. He's lost what he's doing, but actually they've stayed with him and it's worked.
You keep your hand in, you watch out for what's happening with the club where you made your name. Crewe, obviously, I think your fledgling years were at Stoke, weren't they? But you made your name at Crewe. You've been impressed with David Artell? And
very impressed.
The repositioning of the club? He's an unlikely hero, Dean, isn't he?
He is. I mean, obviously, he's an ex-player, and he's got Kenny Lunt, who was, you know, a club hero, as his assistant as well. They haven't lost Crewe's identity. You know, they're still promoting the youth players. They're still looking to play great football, play out from the back, be entertaining. I just think with Crewe, I've always found they go in cycles, because it's so difficult to constantly produce ready-made young players that it's going to work for. But clearly they've given him the time, and over the last 2 to 3 years, he's been able to bring them young players through. And when you've got a good crop like he has now, and you add a few experienced players, then you've got a recipe to do well, and at the moment they are a joy to watch, and they'll get results that people don't expect.
And Paul Tisdale going into Bristol Rovers, there's something that feels like the right fit about that, is there, or is it just me?
No, I think you're right. I think, you know, I've certainly seen a few appearances on Quest. He's quite a deep thinker. He obviously uses a lot of stats based for the way he trains, the way he recruits. And I'd be really excited if I was a Bristol Rovers fan to have someone like him coming in. If you look at what he did at Exeter as well, I think you're right. I think it could be a really good fit for them to to try and push on this season. I don't think it'll take him long either to get a grip of that side.
When he came in to do the Quest highlights, were you all a bit worried? Because he is a bit of a clothes horse, isn't he? You know, he's a swaggering sort of man with a decent image. Did you all have an extra think about what you would wear on that particular day so you didn't look too out of sorts against him?
I did think, do I need to up my game? You know,
that's what I was trying to say.
He's a man that's follically challenged like myself, and but he can pull off the hat a little bit better than me. Look, I just stick to dark colours myself. Dark colours hide plenty of things I'm eating.
If you are a regular listener to the EFL podcast, we will do a Dean Ashton fact sheet on the latest gentleman's apparel. I'm sure he can make some recommendations as to what you could wear. Fixtures in the Sky Bet EFL League One this weekend. Well, don't forget, it is FA Cup round two. So there's only three, actually. Friday night, Fleetwood against Sunderland. Saturday, Ipswich, Charlton. And we've got the A420 Derby as well. That's Oxford against Swindon, which I think was postponed for COVID reasons. First time around in League Two. Newport County lost their 100% record midweek, but maintained it at the weekend after Kevin Ellison, at 41 years, 272 days, became the EFL's oldest goalscorer since David Eyre in 2006. Tranmere Rovers appointed the former Rochdale Barnsley and Bolton Wanderers manager Keith Hill and made it 5 wins out of 6 in all competitions. They're just outside the playoff places, and Oldham Athletic made it 4 league wins in 6. 41 years and 72 days, Dean. Extraordinary that the not just the body holds up, but the mind as well, and the thirst and desire to stay involved with football is still there in Kevin Ellison.
Incredible, yeah. I think whenever I watch him play as well, he still looks really enthusiastic. There's still a sort of energy about him. I think sometimes even when you see players that get towards their late 30s, you can still see they're playing and technically they're okay, but maybe their energy levels aren't. He just looks like he's desperate to play. He said to the manager he should be playing more. And yeah, it was just great to see that he can still, you know, play a big part in Newport's future.
And James Vaughan, 15 years ago, became the Premier League's youngest goal scorer, scored his 99th and 100th league goals. And I always look at a player like that and see the trajectory, and you start on a high, then have to drop down a bit, and there have been highs and lows. We have to respect somebody that, again, can keep going after all that time, despite the sort of school of hard knocks that football brings.
Yeah, absolutely, especially because he's clearly had unbelievable talent and does have unbelievable talent to have got to where he was early on in his career. And he was just devastated with injuries. And that's the main reason why he is where he is. It's not just, you know, it's not because he's not good enough. It's because the injuries have taken their toll on him, but he's still willing to want to play football at any level. He's still willing to put in the performances that he has this season and last season and at Bradford as well, because he clearly loves the game and wants to get the most out of his career. And I commend that, because he must still struggle with them long-term injuries, but wants to push through it to get the most out of his career.
Dean, on a personal note, so sad that your career was ended early. Have you completely processed that now? Are you're very good at your punditry, but are you totally comfortable in your own skin now? Have you got over what happened, or does it always sit there with you wondering what might have been?
I don't think it would be normal to not think about that. Of course, I think about what might have been. I'm getting to an age now where I don't feel like I would be able to do it. I think once you go past that feeling of being an athlete, I think it you then can take yourself away. And the fact that players are retiring that are my age now, I think certainly helps mentally. But there'll never be a day that goes by that I don't wish I could have carried on, could still be playing, and what could have been. But I just think that's a normal mentality to have, and I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah, but it's—I mean, you're still a young pup. You're only 36 years old.
37 yesterday.
No, see, I'm so sorry to have missed your birthday. I'd have organised a bucket of flowers for you from the garage or something like that. I mean, listen, athlete transition is a really hot topic at the moment. I think there's an awareness among stakeholders, despite everything that's gone on with COVID. They have a duty of care and things. I mean, how have you dealt with the last few years? What would be your bit of advice if we do have somebody listening that maybe is coming towards the end of a sort of sporting career?
I suppose the one thing that I sort of kept very much at the forefront of my mind is that football, certainly, that is not normal. That's not a normal world. That's not a normal job. What is normal is when you're at home and you're with family, you're with friends, that's normal. Football's not. So I very much keep football and reality separate. So there's lots of things that come with football, the fame, the way people act towards you, the finance that comes with it. All of that's all not real. The reality is what you're like at home, what you're like as a person, whether your family's healthy, whether your children are healthy, that's what's important. So I very much always kept that at the forefront of my mind, which has meant I've never really been too high or too low. And I think that's been key for me.
What a great piece of advice. League Two fixtures, Port Vale, Leyton Orient and Bolton have won three in a row now in the league. A home to Southend. Loved your company. You're so chilled, aren't you?
Yes, people, I think my wife would say that. I'm a bit too laid back.
I love it. Lovely to have you on. Thanks for sharing.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
That's it for this week. A huge thank you to Dean Ashton, Jake Teller and Corley Woodrow. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, then feel free to give us a 5-star rating. Press the subscribe button and please share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.